It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards.
Anderson, too much deflected.
Bell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Pass thrown, there was contact with the quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know that's
the Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And I am joined for the 2019 Jets Year-End Awards by the man who is the resident stat geek over at Gangrene Nation, Elite Sports New York, TurnOnTheJets.com, and now JetsInsider.com with Mr. Chris Nimbley. He is also, of course, the man who was proudly retweeted by Brian Poole earlier this week. And that is Mr. Michael Nania. Michael, what's going on, sir?
Not too much. I'm ready for the playoffs. It's a really good, looking like it's going to be an exciting race in both conferences on the NFL this year. But the Jets, of course, not involved for the ninth year in a row. But they did go 6-2 in one half of a season for the first time since 2010. So suck on that, the rest of the NFL. Suck on that, Buffalo, Miami, New England, 6-2 in the second half. No one can take that away from us.
Michael, I feel like you're burying the lead, though. You're talking about the playoffs, and don't get me wrong, I'm looking forward to the playoffs as much as the next guy. But why did Brian Poole retweet you?
Oh, I was just out here talking about how great he is, one of the only good additions the Jets made in the offseason. I brought up that he gave up the fewest yards per cover snap out of the slot in the entire NFL this season, so he had a phenomenal season, and he's an impending free agent. He's got to let the world know how good he is, so he's getting a quick start on that, obviously.
Certainly is. I expect him to get a pretty nice contract. I'm hoping that contract comes from the New York Jets. I think that he more than proved his worth this year. He's going to have plenty of suitors. And I'm also thinking, Michael, that if he does get a nice big contract, based at least in part on the tweet you sent out, then you should get a 10% commission fee for pumping up his value.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna bring it up. And whenever his negotiations are, I have to be there in the room and get that cut, because this is a big part of it.
Michael, you do a lot of the hard work that these other publicists don't know how to do properly. So I think that you should be rewarded for that. By the way, before we get into the year-end awards, which I've really been looking forward to because we've got some fun categories, tell me a little bit about what you've got on the offensive line, because I know that you really have been trashing them pretty much ever since the game ended on Sunday, and rightfully so.
Yeah, that's pretty much been my primary focus, and it will be throughout this whole offseason. I am zeroed in on that unit, and tight end as well, which I've been giving some attention to. The blocking from tight end has been horrible as well, but I did on this, you know, victory Monday, in quotes, did a lot of dumping on the offensive line. So we'll start with this pretty random criteria here, but if you really look at it closer, it kind of lets you know just how historically bad they were this season up front. So the Jets took 52 sacks this season. They ran for 3.28 yards per carry and only scored 6 touchdowns on the ground. They're just the third team in league history to allow over 50 sacks and post under 3.3 yards per carry and 6 rushing touchdowns or less. The only other teams to do that were the 2002 Texans and the 2007 Chiefs, who both won 4 games. And yet again, just another example of how the Jets did overachieve this season, like Adam Gase has been every single season since he's been a head coach in the league. But with that 2002 Texans team, that was the first team in Texans history, a team that is most known for giving up 76 sacks in David Carr's first season with them. So that's a team known for having one of the worst offensive lines in league history. So the Jets being mentioned in the same sentence as that team just goes to show you how terrible they were this season. But that's not the only stat that the Jets are grouped up with them. This one's a lot more simple. The Jets picked up a first down on only 15.9% of their rushing attempts this season. That was the worst in the league, and it was the worst by any team since that 2002 Texans team, which was 17 years ago. So on the ground and pass protection, just both phases, it was absolutely horrible. for the Jets. And being mentioned with that Houston team, one of the most infamously bad blocking, one of the worst offensive lines in the history of the league, and everybody knows it because of what happened to David Carr that season. The Jets being mentioned on the same sentence as them is a very accurate and worrying indictment on this offensive line. But in addition to that, I also, a few weeks back, about week 11, I think, I did an offensive line ranking where I compiled a bunch of advanced offensive line stats, you know, pressure percentage, time to throw, blocking grades from Pro Football Focus, which we know are dubious, but it is something we can use. But adjusted line yards per carry, adjusted sack percentage, all these different advanced offensive line metrics, and ranked all the offensive lines in the league according to those numbers. And the Jets were 31st when I did it after week 11. And after doing it again, you know, following all 16 games, they're still 31st. And it's a distant 31st. The Dolphins are way behind them at 32nd. They were absolutely atrocious this season. And obviously the Dolphins tried to tank this season. The offensive line trading Laremy Tunsil was a huge part of that. So the Jets are well ahead of them. But the distance between the Jets and the 30th ranked team in the league on this list, compiling all of these offensive line stats that I put together, the distance between the Jets and the 30th ranked Jaguars is about the difference between Jacksonville and the 12th ranked Cardinals. So the Jets offensive line, they can say they're better than the tanking Dolphins, but every other team in the league is way, way ahead of where the Jets were this season, both run and pass. The Jets were 31st in the league and those compiling all those various metrics together. So yeah, lots of crapping on the offensive line after this season. And I think it's very important. I think Joe Douglas definitely is going to zero in on that. Hopefully he does. I think there's a lot of reasons to believe based on his background that he will give this unit the attention it deserves. You know, the Jets have not picked an offensive lineman in the first round since they took Brick and Mangold back in 2006. Longest drought in the league without a first round offensive lineman. Haven't even picked an offensive lineman in the top two rounds since they picked Vlad Dukas in the second round. And that was late second round. So hopefully the Jets do give the offensive line a lot of attention. That's my biggest wish with this offseason. And really the numbers give you a very, very accurate look at how bad this offensive line was. And this list I put together, I think, really just sums it up the best. It compiles a lot of different numbers. And, you know, any one number can be, you know, questionable. There could be something lost in the, you know, calculation of pressure percentage, time to throw. Our team's getting the ball out more quickly. Is there a quarterback who holds it too long? But when you combine everything together and every number is agreeing that you are substantially worse up front than every other team in the league besides a historically bad tanking Miami team, then it goes to show that it's pretty clear your offensive line is absolutely terrible. Le'Veon Bell ranked last among qualified running backs in yards before contact per attempt. Sam Darnold took the highest pressure percentage in the league. So these two guys could not have been dealt a worse hand by the offensive front this season. And we thought it was bad last year for Darnold, but it just got worse this season. Injuries were a part of it. But I mean, you know, even if Khalil were healthy, Brian Winters, those guys are not that much better than what the Jets got from Jonathan Harrison, Alex Lewis. Those guys, they're all terrible. So this was a really bad group. This is why it's hard to, you know, get too hard on Le'Veon Bell, judge Sam Darnold too much, because this group was just, you know, atrocious. And any way you look at it, you look at the film, you look at the numbers, whether they're, you know, standard numbers like sacks and just rushing or advanced numbers like some of the ones I used to put this list together. No matter what you look at, it is clear they're really bad. So Joe Douglas has a lot of work to do with this offensive line.
I would say that the offensive line was actually far worse in run blocking, which is hard to believe. I didn't think they were good at all in pass blocking, but they certainly were a lot more acceptable there. Sam Darnold, in part, was able to make them look a little better than they were because of the fact that he was able to escape and buy himself some time. And yes, a very bad offensive line, although I don't think that lets Adam Gase off the hook one bit for the level of terribleness this offense showed this year. The offensive line is certainly going to need to be replaced, but last year the offensive line was just as bad in terms of personnel. In fact, they had Spencer Long, who everybody agrees was a disaster at center, and the other guard was James Carpenter, who was also awful. They were replaced by Kelechi Osemele and Ryan Khalil, and even if those guys weren't anything close to what they were in their heyday, we shouldn't have been looking at a situation where the offensive line was this bad. It should have at least been right around as bad as it was last year, which would have been bottom third of the league. So I'm looking forward to talking to some people that really know their offensive line over the course of the offseason and trying to figure this out. In the meantime, though, I will say I'm curious to see how the draft process plays out, because as of now, I would love it if the Jets were able to get one of the top three tackles in the draft, whether that's Jedrick Wills, Andrew Thomas, or Tristan Wirfs in the first round, and then in the second round, come back and get somebody like Mekhi Becton, who's a human battering ram out of Louisville. The guy's 380 pounds, and he can move, which is really rare. You should see him in run blocking. It's unbelievable how he just tosses guys around. So I'd like to see something like that, because they really need to make high-level investments in the offensive line. Michael, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the offensive line in the offseason, and I'm really looking forward to diving in on that. I know that it's not always the most popular conversation to have, but I think it's super important, because the offensive line and the defensive line, as they say, you build in the trenches. For now, though, I want to get into our year-end awards, and I thought we could have fun with this. There are a lot of categories that we could go through that are serious, some that are kind of funny. We'll have different answers, and Michael, of course, will bring to the table his facts that he carries around in his head that'll support his opinions on this. So let's go category by category here. The first category I wanted to do was funniest moment of the year. And to me, there's just no question what the answer to this is. And it's the story about Adam Gase possibly having a burner account and then everybody tweeting at the burner account as though it's actually Adam Gase. I laughed so hard over the Christmas holiday watching this play out on Twitter. Easily the most entertaining thing that happened. I would say the runner-up here would be Carl and the whole Matt Rhule fiasco that went down in January. But still, the Wyatt v. Burner story, to me, is easily the funniest moment of the year involving the Jets.
Yeah, that's definitely a good pick. And I think there are a lot of good ironic choices. You can go with Darnold's mono. You can go with... there are a lot of choices, just, you know, ironic choices. If you're, you know, a Jets fan like us, it's probably not that funny, but it was probably funny to a lot of other people. But I think the burner account is a good one. That was, and anytime an executive or a coach or a player, whoever, gets accused of having a burner account, it's a pretty hilarious occurrence, and there are a lot of great things that go with that. So I'm going to go with you on that one. I think the burner account is a good choice for funniest. If we're staying away from the ironic stuff that happened earlier in the season, I think the burner account is a good choice for the funniest moment of the season.
Worst moment of the year. This one to me is an obvious one, and it's the announcement that Sam Darnold had mono. I'll never forget what was going on at that time. I was out for a run. I came back from my run. My phone was lit up with direct messages, at tweets, and texts from people saying the season was over, and I had no idea what they were even talking about. And then I finally scrolled down through my texts, and one of my friends texted me, "Mono? Seriously? Who the hell gets mono?" And then I thought to myself, he's mentioning mono. Everybody's saying the season is over. What's happening here? Went on Twitter, saw the news, and watched the actual moment where Adam Gase at the podium was going through the injuries. And then he said, yeah, number 14, he's got mono, and he's out indefinitely. So... And I just couldn't stop watching it. I watched it over and over because it was so surreal. But that was definitely the worst moment of the year, because in that moment, Michael, it absolutely felt like the season was over.
Yeah, that was just completely unreal. That was the moment where it just kind of occurred to me, like, how ridiculous things can get with this franchise. That was just so out of left field, so wild, so just so out of nowhere. It just really, and like you said, that was after one game. The Jets lost by 1 point to a Bills team that ended up being pretty good this season. But one game into the season, it felt like it was over. And I went to that Browns game in week two. I drove all the way up 10 hours to go there. And you could just feel in the environment there at the stadium that all the energy after one game, a game that the Jets led, you know, by two scores going into the fourth quarter, all of it had been sucked out. Because of that. So that really set the tone for what the season was going to be. And it's just one of the most, and you know, I don't like to say things are Jetsy, because, you know, things, ridiculous things happen to every team except, you know, the best of the best franchises that stay really consistent. Every team has its share of embarrassing moments, but that right there really fit into some of the ridiculous things that tend to happen to this team. So yeah, I definitely agree. There's no
nothing that even comes close, not just this season. And there are a lot of good choices for bad moments this season, but even really in the history of this team, as close to that, just because of how just how ridiculous that is. Like, the quarterback getting mono, you can't make it up. I was just completely shocked. I can't even think of words right now. It was just very surprising. It was just, yeah, that's the worst by far.
I remember hanging out with you during halftime of the Browns game, and we were just talking about how all this weirdness was happening with the Jets, and we just couldn't get over the mono, and then how Trevor Siemian was knocked out for the season at halftime, and it was like all these quarterbacks were getting knocked down like bowling pins. And I remember telling you that it reminded me a little bit of 2005 when Chad Pennington re-aggravated his shoulder and he was out for the year, and then right after that, Jay Fiedler's backup ended up being out for the year, and then they spent the rest of the season with Vinny Testaverde coming back in off the couch, and Brooks Bollinger didn't end up having to be that way because Darnold came back after only three games, but we were treated to Luke Falk. I would say that Luke Falk playing quarterback for the Jets would certainly qualify as one of the worst moments of the year, but not quite on par with finding out that Sam Darnold had mono. Now, as far as moments go, let's talk about the best moment of the year. There are a lot of directions that we could go in here, but I'm going to have to say the best moment of the year in so many different ways was the announcement that Mike Maccagnan had been relieved of his duties as general manager, and then the subsequent hiring of Joe Douglas. I guess you could pair them together or you could pick which one you want, but I think so many of us were resigned to Mike Maccagnan coming back in 2019, and it deflated a lot of the hope that we had. And then when he was relieved of his duties and they brought in somebody that has a sterling reputation of being able to acquire good players and making smart decisions and learning at the feet of some of the best football minds in the business, it really gave us a bit of a jump start as Jets fans and renewed our sense of optimism. So I would say that the best moment of the year was Maccagnan being relieved of his duties, tied into the hiring of Joe Douglas.
I think for me, and I think we're going to do a best play of the year, so I think there's a play from this game that I think that I'll go with later, but best moment, I think that Cowboys game was really important because just to see the Jets be a historically terrible offense for four games to start the season, I think they averaged about 6 points a game offensively over those first four games, didn't even score a touchdown, or they scored one touchdown without Darnold when they were down like 30-0 against the Eagles, but they were a complete joke, an embarrassing team without Darnold those three games. And even when he did play, the offense really struggled when he's playing with mono. But that Cowboys game, he came back and completely rejuvenated the team. And obviously following that game, had the Monday night game against New England and a couple rough games against the Jaguars and Dolphins. But for that one moment against the Cowboys, it really felt like Darnold just completely rejuvenated the entire team. And it was a really positive and uplifting time just because of what he did, and that was one of the best games of his career. So that Cowboys game definitely was the peak of the season, even though the Jets were 1-4 at that point, with him coming back and really lifting up a team, completely changing a team that had nothing without him, making them look competent with him on the field against a solid Cowboys team was really good to see. That was definitely the most positive moment for me.
I guess we know what your answer is going to be to this next category then, which is game of the year, best game of the year for the Jets. I assume you're going to stick with the Cowboys. I'm going to go with the Raiders because that was the one game where the Jets just won by massive blowout, and it was never in doubt, and the offense and defense both played very, very well. The Cowboys game would be a close second just because of all the things you just said, but I got to go with that Raiders game as game of the year.
Yeah, I'll go with you on the game of the year with the Raiders because that was easily their best performance. Both sides of the ball, they were completely dominant. Offensively, Darnold was efficient. He moved the chains. Robbie Anderson helped him out with a couple huge plays, contested catches downfield. He was great in that game. Gase called a pretty good game that time. The Jets really drew up a lot of creative stuff that was working. Defensively, they were really dominant against the Raiders team that at that point was a top 10 offense in the league, and the Jets at that point sent them into a tailspin over the rest of the season. So that was easily one of their most dominant performances, really, you know, of this decade, as dominant as they were against the Raiders that game. I think it was their biggest blowout at home of the decade, or I think 2010 was, I forget when it was, but it was definitely, if not their biggest, their second biggest after a game earlier in the decade. But that was one of their most dominant performances that we've seen in recent memory. So I think that definitely deserves, because even though the Cowboys game had all that other stuff going forward. Darnold's return. They did let the Cowboys back into that game and barely hold on, but they completely destroyed the Raiders, who at that point we thought were a pretty good team. So that was, I think that definitely deserves game of the year.
We did best game of the year. Now let's do worst game of the year. There are a lot of games that we could pick from here, Michael. The Patriots games, both of them were terrible. The Eagles game, absolutely atrocious. That first Bills game, even though it was close, it was just a brutal showing. I, however, am going to go with the Bengals loss because they lost to the worst team in the league and they lost decisively. They got beat up real bad, and that to me has to be the worst game of the year because it's the most embarrassing. You could justify getting blown out by the Patriots twice. You could justify going on the road and losing to the Eagles by a wide margin, especially when Luke Falk is the quarterback. But to play the Cincinnati Bengals and only muster up 6 points and to get dominated and destroyed by Andy Dalton, to me, no question, worst game of the year, the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. And it's ironic because Sam Darnold did play pretty well in that game. He made a lot of good throws. But the receivers in that game were very bad, dropped a lot of passes. The offensive line was completely brutal. The run game was terrible. So the play calling is not good in that game. We talked about it a bunch, how they didn't attack the Bengals' greatest weaknesses in the run game. So there were a lot of issues in that game. Darnold was, it wasn't his best game, but I mean, if you look at the film of how he played in that game, he was pretty decent. So that was really a team loss to an 0-11 team in the Bengals. But now Baker Mayfield and the Browns have joined the Jets and losing to the Bengals. But that's definitely a good one. But to mix it up, I'll go with the Patriots game on Monday night because what we just talked about, the Cowboys game, how uplifting that was to get Darnold back. And yes, the Jets were 0-4. We didn't really have realistic playoff hopes at that point, but it seemed like the Jets were really going to be a legitimate team over the rest of the season having Darnold back in the lineup. But so to come off of that game, to come back home the next week on Monday night, second straight home game, and then just get dismantled by the Patriots. And unlike the Bengals game, that one was very much on Darnold. But still, the offensive line that game didn't block anybody. But, just from Darnold's perspective, it was one of the worst, easily the worst performance of his career, one of the worst quarterbacking performances ever. So for that game, especially with the timing of it, right after that Cowboys game, that was a really, really deflating game, as deflating of a Jets loss as we've had over the past few years, just because of what happened the week before. So I will go with that Patriots game on Monday night.
Next category, favorite Darnold throw of the year. There are a lot to choose from because Sam Darnold was inconsistent at points, but he made some really nice throws this season. To me, though, there's only one choice that stands out above all the rest, and that is that throw to Jamison Crowder against the Baltimore Ravens on Thursday Night Football. There are maybe 5 quarterbacks on the planet that can make a throw like that into such a tight window, right on the money. It was everything you want a quarterback to be able to do, and he did it on the run, too. So there's no way that he's ever going to top that throw, as far as I'm concerned. One of the best throws I've ever seen, period.
Okay, so this category's right up my alley with all the Darnold film I've been watching over the past few weeks, scoring every single throw. So before I answer this one, are we doing a best play of the year? Because I have a good idea for that, but it could also apply to this one. So are we doing the best play of the year later?
You know we are.
Okay, so I'm going to save this one for later because this one play I'm thinking of, I just went nuts when that happened. So I'll pick a different one for the Darnold throw. The one you said to Crowder is a great one. That was an amazing throw on the run, fitting it into a tight window, just a very tight window. It really, if it were anywhere else, that throw to Crowder would have been probably would have been incomplete. And for it to come after Crowder dropped a wide open touchdown on the play before, definitely showed some confidence in Darnold to go back to Crowder there, especially in that situation. And he made some other great throws in that Ravens game. There was the one where, and this one was incomplete, but it was fourth down. There was immediate pressure. He was fading away, but he just lofted it up and gave Robbie Anderson a chance at it. That was a good one. But I think that Crowder one definitely should take the cake. That was one of his best throws, really one of the best throws he's made in his career. So I'm going to go with you on that one. There's another one I have in mind. I'm going to save that for best play of the year. But that throw to Crowder, it was one of many good throws he made against the Ravens game, which is why he played really well in that Ravens game, because his best throws were really, really good in that game. And his worst plays in that game, even though he did have a decent number of them, really weren't his fault that often because the receivers were not getting separation in that game, there were not a lot of options. But at his best, Darnold was really overcoming the pressure, making some great throws into tight windows, and none better than that touchdown to Jameson Crowder. So that was just a some of the most beautiful, perfect ball placement you could ever see. So I'm going to agree with you on that one for this particular question, but I have another one in mind for later. But the touchdown to Crowder against Baltimore, I'm going to agree with you on that one for best Darnold throw of the year.
Least favorite Darnold throw of the year, I've got to go with that throw he made into triple coverage in that first Miami game that got intercepted. Still have no idea what he was even trying to do. That ball should have been thrown into the 20th row. Absolutely inexcusable, especially considering that the Jets were driving for a score. There were a lot of contenders in this category, even though there was a lot more good than bad out of Darnold this year. He certainly made his share of bad throws, but to me, this was the worst one of the bunch.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. And you could take your pick from the New England ones, but to be honest, they were all so bad, I can barely even separate them from one another. But that pick against Miami was really, really bad. And especially because of the situation at the end of the second half, Jets could have easily scored a field goal or even, I believe, had another play, another shot at the end zone. But that was as bad as it gets, a situation where there's absolutely no possibility to get something out of the play, because sometimes there are, you can give the quarterback a little bit of an excuse, because if they can make a great throw, there's a window there for them to make something happen. You don't want to take these shots, but you know, sometimes Darnold has these interceptions where, you know, again, you would rather him not do it, but you can see what he's going for. This was not one of those. There was absolutely nothing there, and he just lost, like you said, just lost it up right into the hands of the defense. And you know, if it wasn't intercepted by the player ended up getting it, there are other players there who probably would have as well. And it was in the worst situation possible. So, you know, Darnold wasn't awful in that game. He wasn't good, but that was the one big mistake he made. But that was one of definitely the worst mistake he's made in the season. And, you know, there are some other good picks, like you said, the New England game. But, you know, really since that stretch against the Patriots, Jaguars, and Dolphins, he's done a much better job keeping the ball safe. These last two games against the Steelers and Bills, he made some really questionable decisions. It wasn't a good finish to the season, but he did have a really good six-game stretch between after that Dolphins game, starting at the Giants game, all the way up through the Ravens game. He had a really nice six-game stretch there. But I agree with you. The Dolphins pick at the end of the first half in that first loss, in the loss of the Dolphins in Miami in Week 9, that's definitely it. Just poor decision-making, really poor decision-making, because there wasn't really any accuracy involved because there was no window to throw it into. It was just a really bad decision to not get rid of that ball.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Pleasant Surprise Award. Now we're going to do this on offense and defense. We will start on the offensive side of the ball. And to me, the most pleasant surprise on offense was Ryan Griffin. When Christopher Herndon got suspended, we all thought that the Jets had lost their chance to use their tight end as a weapon in the passing game. And then when Christopher Herndon got hurt, we thought, oh no, Christopher Herndon was going to be the breakout player this year. And it turns out that he's not even going to play more than a handful of snaps. Ryan Griffin stepped up, and as you've documented, Michael, and we'll talk about plenty in the offseason, Ryan Griffin is a terrible blocker, but he turned out to be a pretty solid weapon in the passing game. He really became a reliable target for Sam Darnold. He got hurt toward the end of the season, but still, I think he was easily the most pleasant surprise on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and I barely think there's even another option with this one, because you know, you had Robbie Anderson made a lot of great plays this year, but ultimately his production was very similar or a little bit lower than it was the past couple years, so it wasn't like he surprised you. And we knew he could make these contested intermediate catches, but he wasn't a surprise. Jameson Crowder was pretty much exactly as advertised. His production ended up pretty close to where it was the past few years. He gave you the big plays, he also gave you some maddening drops. He was exactly as advertised. Le'Veon Bell, obviously, from a production standpoint, was extremely disappointing. The offensive line is garbage. There's nothing positive there. Chuma Edoga, I think, was kind of on track to being this pleasant surprise, but he fell way off a cliff very, very quickly after a good start. So Ryan Griffin really is the only option, and I don't think the negative impact of his blocking got enough attention. He really hurt them in the run game, and the other tight ends did as well, Daniel Brown and Trevon Wesco. But so the tight end blocking is another big issue they got to figure out. I think Herndon's definitely going to help because he developed into an average blocker down the stretch of his rookie season, and he has the potential to be better. And Trevon Wesco, too, has the potential to be better because, you know, blocking in, for tight ends in the NFL isn't as high floor of a skill as it seems to be. It is something that, you know, we've seen takes time to develop. TJ Hockenson and Noah Fant have struggled for the most part as well this season. Two guys who were taken early in the draft this season. So it is something Wesco can develop, and he did show signs. But overall, the blocking the Jets got out of the tight ends this season was really bad. They could use a good, solid, proven veteran in that role next season, and Griffin was a part of that. But this is about pleasant surprise, and what Griffin brought to the table as a receiver was definitely a pleasant surprise. With Chris Herndon out of the lineup, it seemed like the Jets were back to the 2015-2016 kind of state where they had absolutely nothing at the tight end position. But then Griffin, after not being too involved early on, definitely became a big part of the offense in that middle part of the season. Had, I believe, the most touchdowns in a season for a Jets tight end since Dustin Keller. So he definitely became a bigger part of the offense than I think a lot of people expected. And he's always been a solid receiver. He never put up big numbers, but he's always a guy who could get some key receptions, especially near the red zone. Although he never touched this touchdown production that he did with the Jets this season, he is always a guy who could get you a couple of legitimate catches per game, not just, you know, screen passes out of the backfield, you know, like Eric Tomlinson did, just these surprise catches, a guy who could legitimately run routes and catch the ball. And the Jets got definitely benefited from that in the middle part of the season when they got on that winning streak in the middle of the year. So definitely he is the pleasant surprise of the year offensively. And if you can get a healthy Chris Herndon back, hopefully Griffin's healthy as well next season, that's a really good 1-2 punch receiving duo at tight end. The blocking's got to be better. They got to figure that out. Hopefully Wesco develops. If not, hopefully they can add a veteran who's proven in that role. But in terms of receiving, if you can have Herndon and Griffin healthy, that's one of the better 1-2 punches in terms of pass catching at tight end in the league.
Pleasant surprise on the defensive side of the ball. There are a lot of players that would qualify here. You could go with Kyle Phillips, who did pretty well as an undrafted rookie free agent. You could talk about Nathan Shepard, who came off a suspension and a season last year where he did nothing and actually contributed quite a bit down the stretch. You could talk about Foley Fatakasi, who I thought had an excellent season on the defensive line after contributing next to nothing last year. But I think all of those guys pale in comparison to Blessing Austin. This was an insane story because here's a guy who had only played one game in the past 2+ years. He was expected to redshirt. Everybody thought there was no way he was even going to play this year. He was on IR. He comes off IR, gets shoved right into the starting lineup about midway through that Giants game in week number 10 because Nate Hairston had been struggling and Darrell Roberts had been struggling. And so Blessing Austin was pretty much all they had left, and he got shoved out there and he did pretty well. Now, granted, the last couple of weeks, he somehow managed to get himself in Greg Williams' doghouse after giving up that touchdown at the end of the half against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he was never seen again on the field, not in that game and not in the finale against the Buffalo Bills. But for this guy to come out of nowhere like this and to have the impact that he did, locking down the starting corner job for what amounted to 6 games this season because he didn't play against Buffalo and he played half the Giants game and half of the Steelers game, so 6 full games, that's more than anybody would have imagined. And even if he was going to play, I can't imagine anybody would have thought that he would have ever gotten into the lineup as a starter, let alone produce at the level that he did. So for me, a lot of good candidates on this side of the ball in the pleasant surprise category, but I've got to go with Bless Austin.
Yeah, that's a great pick, and I was a huge Bless Austin fan. I still am a huge fan of his. I think he has a lot of potential. It's unfortunate he made that mistake against the Steelers, and, you know, to be fair, it was absolutely terrible what he did, the mistake he made at the end of that half, just the timing of it and the way he covered it, giving up the outside on that play. So for him to finish the season in Greg's doghouse is a little bit disappointing. I mean, from my perspective, I would have rather just seen him, you know, try bounce back from that mistake because he was playing really well before that, one of the better corners in the league in terms of yards per cover snap allowed. So it was unfortunate to see that, but, you know, I could see what Greg is going for. They have a lot of other guys to kind of try out at that position and definitely probably want to make a statement with that mistake because it was, you know, the most inexcusable mistake a cornerback can make. So he'll learn from that. I think he definitely has a lot of potential going forward. And like you said, there were no expectations for him at all this season. He didn't even practice until October. And this is a guy who, you know, like you said, played, I think one, maybe a couple games in college the last couple seasons. But to mix it up, I'm going to go with Kyle Phillips. This is a guy who I don't think anyone even talked about going into the season throughout the preseason. But he was a big part of the run defense this year. We talked about it a lot on here, how good they were against the run throughout the season. And Kyle Phillips was a really big part of that. So, you know, he was just an undrafted free agent who no one expected anything out of, and then comes in, plays the run on the edge really, really well. So he's a big part of that run defense. And definitely for me, he's the surprise of the year. I remember early in the season, and I know the roster pretty much as well as you can, but just, you know, sometimes I just have to double take and just get another look at who number 98 was. But he just kept showing up week after week of those plays against the run. So he definitely came out of nowhere and really made a great impact, joining Robbie Anderson as another solid undrafted free agent on this team. So up front, the Jets are really strong. Phillips is a big part of that. And like the other guys you mentioned, Nathan Shepard is a candidate for the surprise of the year. Foley Fadakasi is another great candidate for this. He was excellent against the run. Shepard as a pass rusher took a huge step forward, and he was good against the run as well. But really across the whole defensive front, Jets are more than okay there. There's no reason for any big investments at that position. And Kyle Phillips being one of the big surprises is a huge reason that the Jets are in a very good spot on that defensive line.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next up is Breakout Player of the Year. And Michael, I'm not going to lie to you. On the offensive side of the ball, I don't even know who you would pick here. I suppose you could double dip and go with Ryan Griffin, because I don't know who else would even qualify. Everybody else that was good this year is somebody that you would have expected to be good, and everybody who is bad is pretty much everybody who you would have expected to be bad, and if anything, they would have been somebody who was a disappointment. But nobody that really, to me, fits the breakout category. I thought that it was going to be Christopher Herndon, but he ended up not being able to play at all this year except for a few plays before he ended up getting injured after the suspension. So I'm just going to leave this one vacant.
Yeah, there really is not a choice unless you want to go with Ryan Griffin again, like you said. There's just no choice. Robbie Anderson's numbers were down a little bit, although he did play a lot better than I think those numbers showed. Sam Darnold missed him a lot this season. Jameson Crowder, like we said, he was about what you expected. Le'Veon Bell, disappointing. Offensive line, terrible. Sam Darnold only made marginal improvement in terms of his production, although I think you can argue he improved, you know, in a realistic sense, looking at his film, he improved more than the numbers show. But in terms of the production, it was only slight increases for him this season. So there's really not a choice on offense unless you want to go with Ryan Griffin.
On the defensive side of the ball, there are a lot of interesting choices here, and I brought up a couple of them with the Pleasant Surprise Award, but I'm going to go with Foley Fadakasi. I thought that he played excellent for the bulk of this season. He was an elite run stuffer, and he's somebody that showed that he has the potential to be maybe a poor man's Damon Harrison. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to be as good as Damon Harrison, because remember, Snacks was a multi-time All-Pro, but if he could just clog up that middle and be that elite run stuffer and fill that role, that'll be a really nice return on the investment the Jets made when they drafted him in the sixth round out of UConn.
Yeah, I'm going to match you there and go with Fadakasi, a guy who, you know, had no role last season, then comes out of nowhere and is one of the better run defenders in the league this season. His in the preseason, it really flashed his ability to time the snap, get off the line of scrimmage, and really make some quick, powerful penetration in the run game. And he translated that throughout the regular season and did it against some really good opponents, too, on opposing offensive fronts. So he was really good against the run. Nathan Shepard is probably my number two pick here. A guy who did get a lot of playing time last season, but just did not do much of anything with it, was really quiet as a pass rusher, not good against the run, missed some tackles. But this season, he made some, he's definitely a better pass rusher this season, much more active in that phase. And against the run, too, he was definitely more active than last season. He is much improved, I think, more so than any other player on the defensive line. He had the freedom to really shoot through gaps and use his athleticism to make some plays, and it did lead to some moments where he missed some tackles or left a gap open. He's not a perfect player yet, but he definitely improved to a very solid piece of one of the better, deeper defensive lines in the league. That was great against the run. One of the best run defenses in the league this season, and Shepard was a big part of that. But I will go with Fadakasi. I think he is a better player at this point than Shepard. Shepard's more well-rounded. He's definitely a better pass rusher. Fadakasi doesn't really bring anything there. But against the run, Fadakasi is really a borderline elite player with how good he was against the run this season. So, like you said, is he going to be as good as Snacks was? Probably not, because Snacks against the run is as dominant as any other player in the league is, as anything, when he was at his peak. I don't think Fadakasi is quite at that point, but he's definitely he was really good against the run this season. Maybe the MVP of that elite run defense. So I'm definitely going with him for a breakout player on the defense and really the entire team, since there isn't an option for the offense.
Before we get to our next category, just want to remind you about the great deal you can get at Vivid Seats. If you download the Vivid Seats mobile app right now, use the promo code OVERTIME and get up to $100 off on your very first purchase. Could use that promo code to go get yourself some playoff tickets. Maybe you want to go see Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. Perhaps you want to go see the Philadelphia Eagles. Both are pretty close by. If you don't want to go to one of those playoff games, though, you could do something else. Go to a concert, go to a wrestling match, a boxing match, a basketball game, a hockey game. Whatever it is you want to do, you can use the promo code OVERTIME, and it'll get you up to $100 off on your very first purchase when you download the Vivid Seats mobile app. Next category, favorite play of the year, offensive side of the ball. There are a lot of choices that you can make. I think, obviously, the Darnold throw to Crowder that we talked about before is one of them. But to me, the one that stands out was that home run pass, the 93-yard touchdown that Sam Darnold threw to Robbie Anderson in that Cowboys game, just because of the feeling in the stadium. And, Michael, you talked about it before. Everybody was down going into that game. There was no hope left in the season. Everybody thought that it was just a lost cause, and who even knew what Sam Darnold was going to give you coming back off of mono? How strong was he going to be? Nobody knew. When he threw that pass, the stadium just went bonkers, and it lit a fuse, and all of a sudden, at least temporarily, Jets fans' hopes were alive again. It was a fantastic play. It was a good throw. It wasn't one of Darnold's top 5 or 10 throws of the season, I don't think. It certainly was top 5 or 10 in terms of impact. I'm just saying in terms of how good the throw itself was. It was a good throw, but the one to Crowder was a much better actual throw. But this play was just, to me, the play of the season. And if you're a Jets fan and you look back at anything on the offensive side of the ball that stands out to you, that's the play.
Yeah, this is the one I've been waiting for. This is the one I had to save for this point. That's it for sure. And I went as loud watching that play as I have for almost any Jets play over the past few seasons, probably since that missed field goal against the Giants and overtime, Eric Decker's touchdown against the Patriots, both of those in 2015, probably since that. That was just everything that had happened over the course of the season to that point, boiled into one play, all the frustration of the Jets not being able to produce anything on offense, anything through the air, being completely destroyed week after week, Sam Darnold coming back. And like you said, you wondered, does he have the strength, any strength left in him coming back from mono? Is he going to be able to spark this team? The Jets got off to a nice start in that game, but they were still kind of, you know, not getting too much going on offense. But then in one play, it just became clear the spark that Darnold was going to give this team. And the Jets did end up going 7-5 after his return. So it definitely was a sign of the improvements that would be made with Darnold. And it really was an incredible, I think it really was a great throw. I think it is right up there with that Crowder throw, maybe the best throw of the season, because I mean, when you watch it back, he did have to step up after Edoga gave up some pressure on the right side. And then when he threw it, he wasn't even completely balanced because there was more pressure coming up the middle. And the throw was just, it was really deep. I believe he threw it from the end zone to about the 50-yard line, and it was in the perfect spot just beyond the safety who took, I mean, when I looked at it again, I kind of wondered, you know, did the safety, I forget who it was, I think it was Jeff Heath, did he take a bad angle? Did, you know, that help the throw make, did that help make the throw look better than it really was? But the last time I looked at, looked back at it, it really seemed like the safety could not have taken a much better angle, but Darnold just put it and the absolute perfect spot, and Robbie Anderson did not have to break stride at all. So I went completely nuts for that play, as much as I have really for any Jets play ever. It was just the culmination of a lot of frustration kind of being alleviated in one play. It was just phenomenal. And, you know, it's too bad that it wasn't, you know, too indicative of things to come, you know, especially with what happened the next week. But with that throw and then the way Darnold finished the half right after that, the 2-minute drive, That was a really fun game, easily the most fun of the season, just because of everything that had happened before that point, Darnold returning. But all of that was best represented by that one play. That was so much fun to watch.
Favorite play of the season on defense, and I'm going to stick with the same game because to me, when I think of defensive plays, there were a lot of them that stuck out to me because the defense played so well this year, especially considering the injuries. But the one that I will remember was Jamal Adams rushing straight up the middle on Dak Prescott and forcing the incompletion on the two-point conversion to seal the deal against the Dallas Cowboys, followed by Jamal Adams being like the ultimate warrior and lapping around the stadium, high-fiving fans, swinging his helmet, celebrating, and the Jets getting themselves a win over a team that at the time we thought was a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Of course, later on, they ended up not even making the playoffs. But the point is, that play to me was the defensive play of the year and a phenomenal play by Jamal Adams. And by the way, as I'm sure we'll talk about later, Greg Williams deserves plenty of credit as well for dialing that play up.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to go with another Jamal Adams play. I'm going to go with the strip sack against the Giants. That was Jamal. He had the pick six against, you know, Jarrett Stidham against the Patriots, which was good for him, his first touchdown. But for him to come through later on against a more legitimate, you know, not playing against a backup quarterback, to do it against Daniel Jones in that game against the Giants in a crucial moment where the Jets really needed it. That was huge. And just a showcase of, because that was in that midseason stretch where he was really getting the sacks, racking up those sacks each and every week. Ultimately, he didn't get that sack record, but that doesn't really matter because it shouldn't take away from the fact that he's still the most dominant pass rushing safety in the league. He might be the best run defending safety in the league. He's one of the best cover safeties in the league. So for him to come through with that play, that's an example of a superstar play right there, because not many safeties even blitz as often as he does. Not many safeties are able to create pressure the way he does with, you know, the blocking he had to evade to get home to Jones on that play. I believe he split two blockers on the outside there. So not only are there very few safeties who even pass rush that much, can pass rush that well, but for him to get home, just swipe the ball right out of Dan, especially being Daniel Jones, because we know as Jets fans, you know, with Darnold being there, especially with Darnold being there, that, you know, Jones is kind of a guy who we don't really want to succeed all that much. So for Adams to bust into the backfield there, that was just one of the most disrespectful plays, definitely from the Jets this year, but really one of the more disrespectful plays I have ever seen. That was a lot of fun to watch, that one too. The Jets had some really good peak plays this season. They did, even though they didn't have some as many signature games as you would hope. They're the highlight plays for sure there. So the Darnold play, the touchdown to Robbie Anderson against the Cowboys, that would be mine for offense. But defensive, I'm definitely going with Jamal and his strip sack of Daniel Jones for the touchdown.
That's going to wrap up part one of our year-end 2019 New York Jets Awards. Part two will be tomorrow. In the meantime, make sure you're reading Michael's work in all the places that he publishes it. Follow him on Twitter at Michael_Nania. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.